Francis of Assisi gave up his possessions. Augustine gave up his mistress. John Newton gave up his very profitable slave trading business. And Father Damien gave up his health because they all believed Jesus was that amazing. Peter, speaking for the rest of the apostles, said to Jesus, "We have left everything to follow you." That's how amazing the apostles found Jesus to be. And in his gospel, Mark uses that buzzword, amazed or amazing, throughout his 16 chapters to remind the Christian community of just how amazing Jesus is. Not only is Jesus amazing, but Christianity is amazing as well. Most of the major world religions have as their center of most popularity their geographical point of origin. Only Christianity has shifted its geographical point of greatest popularity over the last 2,000 years. It travels so well, the Christian faith. It appeals to all four corners of the globe. Its original starting place in Jerusalem, then shifted to North Africa, then to Alexandria, then to Rome, then to Northern Europe, then across the sea to North America, and today in the global south and the global east, Christianity is more popular in those places than any other place on the planet because the Christian faith appeals to everyone regardless of where they live. Now, it's easy to wonder why Christianity travels at all, why it is once popular in one geographical region and then not so popular and becomes popular in another place. Andrew Walls offers his conjecture of explanation this way. He writes, "Where the Christian faith has too much money and too much power for too long, it begins to spoil and the center moves on." In most recent history, we find that to be true in Europe. Once wildly popular, is not popular at all. I believe, personally, we're seeing the same thing happen in North America as the Christian faith decreases in popularity for this very reason. Too much power, too much influence, and too many resources do not bode well with the rise of Christianity. Here's why. Power and influence and resource has a way of preventing us from continuing to see how amazing Jesus is. And we find ourselves leaning into our mega resources and our growing power instead of leaning into the amazing Jesus. Christianity has always appealed more to the less than to the haves throughout world history. It's amazing. And last week I encouraged you to vote for Jesus if education was important to you, because a vote for Jesus is a vote for education. At his center, Jesus was a rabbi or teacher, and we learned in the Gospel of Mark there has never been an educator like Jesus. The crowd said, "No one has ever taught like this. One with such authority and power." The reason why Jesus was able to teach with authority and power was because he is the creator of the universe and he understands human beings better than any other teacher we will ever have. And if you need to learn how to deal with your anxiety or depression, if you need to learn how to better manage difficult relationships, or if you just need to understand the purpose for your existence, you will find no better educator on those matters and so many more than Jesus Christ. This morning I'm telling you that a vote for Jesus is a vote for healthcare. Healthcare is a critically important issue in the life of Jesus, and it should be in our lives as well. Now, before some of you get a little itchy in your pews, you're not about to hear a sermon this morning on what the best healthcare option is for the United States. That subject is far too difficult for me to get my little head around. I don't know the answer to that question, but you are about to hear a message about the importance of healthcare to Jesus and the importance of healthcare to the followers of Jesus Christ. You've all heard the saying, well, if you got your health, you got everything. And if you don't, you've got nothing. And there is a lot of truth in that statement that points to the vital role of healthcare and proper functioning of our human bodies. I mean, one little glitch in the symptom in our system, right? An abdominal pain out of nowhere, a toothache, even a common cold can disrupt the rest of our lives and seem to take over. One physical ailment has a way of disturbing every other area of our lives. And so does the threat of a physical illness like coronavirus that we've been hearing so much about. The entire world has been disturbed by coronavirus. Travel, stock market, sporting events, school closings, religious meetings, corporate events. We're not sure about a lot of things in relationship to the coronavirus and where things are going, but what we are sure of is that it has, at least for the moment, affected us and changed the practices of this world. I want to remind us that this isn't the first time something like this has happened in human history. An epidemic becomes a pandemic when it crosses borders. And the first recorded record of a pandemic is in 433 BC. There have been many more to follow. Others occurred in 165, 250, and 541 AD. Another one occurred in 1350 when something known as the Black Death was responsible for the death of one-third of the world's population. In 1918, the Spanish flu claimed the lives of 50 million people. In 1981, AIDS was identified. I was 12 years old. I remember how scary that was. In fact, here's my childhood memory. I'm in the front yard. It's fall, and I'm playing in a pile of leaves. And I have this thought that maybe I'm going to get AIDS from these leaves. Because I guess I heard something on TV, or remember how people just didn't know where it was coming from? There was just so much fear and so much anxiety. The coronavirus is just the latest of a long list of threats, some which have been very impactful and some of which have not. Not trying to scare anybody, I'm just trying to remind everyone that this is not new to human history. So I'm talking about physical illness this morning, and it's important to Jesus. But I want to remind us, thankfully, we've seen in the last couple of decades a greater appreciation and treatment of mental illness. You know, the thing that we never used to talk about, you know, or deal with. But because of the uptick of depression, anxiety, the suicide rate, finally we are valuing the treatment of mental illness like we should have long ago. But the greatest source of our health is not physical and it's not mental. It's the health of our souls. And Jesus focuses a lot in terms of educating us on the importance of soul care. Listen, you're not a body and you're not a mind. You are a soul that presently has a body and has a mind. And the care of your soul is the most important thing in your life. But I'm talking this morning just about physical health care. And I'm going to take you to an episode in Mark chapter 7, where Jesus continues his healing ministry. This is just one example of 40 plus examples of Jesus' healing ministry. And that Jesus didn't heal people just to show off his power. The primary reason for healing people is because he cared for people. And we read of one such episode in Mark 7, beginning at 31. It reads, "Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis." So he's actually in predominantly Gentile territory when this happens, which was unusual for Jesus to be in a place like this. Verse 32, "There some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged him to place his hand on the man. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, 'Ephphatha,' which means 'be opened.' At this, the man's ears were open, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone. But the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with," and here's Mark's buzzword, "amazement. 'He has done everything well,' they said. 'He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak.'" Let me just make a few observations to begin with from this passage. One thing I want to be sure that we see is how here Jesus is showing people that the impossible in life is very possible to him. I mean, when it came to issues like hearing loss and muteness, there were no cures. You know, there were no possibilities, you know, of improvement and of treatment. And so Jesus is showing them and us that what looks impossible to us is very possible to him. I was talking to a woman who's probably close to 80 now, and she was talking about her frustrations with me with her hearing aids not working so well, eyeglasses not working so well, frustrations that come with that, and pain medication for her arthritis not working so well. And so I was seeking to listen with empathy and compassion, I also observed, you know, the things we're talking about right now are options that most people in the world do not have. You know, hearing loss, most people, when you've got it, there are no hearing aids and vision loss, there are no glasses and chronic pain, there is no medication. We have options. And Jesus is showing these people and us that when it comes to very difficult situations in life, because of him, we have the best option. And what Jesus taught them, I think he's taught us in our lives as followers of Jesus Christ. Aren't there some situations in your past that you can recollect right now that when they happened were so difficult, so horrific, maybe so unbelievable to what you were expecting in life, seemingly impossible odds, and yet because you followed Jesus through them, it became very possible to live through them and to glorify God through them. The second thing I want to remind us of is how Jesus, what he does here, demonstrates how God cares for every individual. Like, did you notice that Jesus took this man aside, away from the crowd, and treated him in private? Because to Jesus, this was like a person. He was less interested in showing off and primarily interested in treating a sick man. And he spoke the man's language. Did you notice that in the text, the sign language going on with a man that can't hear and can't speak? Jesus touches his ears, he spits, and then he touches the man's tongue because the man can't speak, he can't hear. This is Jesus' sign language to demonstrate to him that what's about to happen here, like, it's coming through the power of God in me. Now, the one that throws me for the loop as a germaphobe is the spitting part, right? You know, I know it's Jesus' spit, but you know, people back then, many people believed that saliva had some kind of healing remedy in it, and so that's another way of Jesus speaking. This healing's about to come, and it's about to come directly through me. And you need to know that Jesus cares. Not just about us, but about you. And when you have your doubts in relationship to his care for you, which many of us will, all you need to do is to go back to Calvary, where you will get the clearest picture ever in your life that what's going on in your life is not because of the absence of Jesus' care. It's always very present. Third thing I want you to see from this passage is how Jesus is demonstrating to them that the Israelite community, the one they had been waiting for, has actually arrived. Do you remember what the crowd said after the man was healed? He's done everything well. He even gives hearing to the deaf and speech to the mute. And they are recalling Isaiah's prophecy in chapter 35. I'll read it to you. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be open and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer and the mute tongue shout for joy. They just saw with their own eyes and own experience what had been promised for centuries, that your God was coming to rescue you. God was with them. And God is with us this morning. And he is fighting and fighting to defeat evil and put a total annihilation to it. And that's why Jesus, among other reasons, is so amazing. So this man received what some of you this morning and many of us often want in our lives, which is immediate healing. I mean, he was sick this day, he was totally healed in that same day, and many of us want that, and many of us do not have that. Cancer has not been removed, Alzheimer's has not been cured, paralysis has not been solved, arthritis has not been remedied, and that bothers a lot of us who are going through difficult times of the body. So I want to mention two things to that direct issue. Number one, it may bother us, but it bothers Jesus even more. What's bothering and frustrating you, something that has not been cured as of yet, bothers Jesus even more. Did you notice that in between his looking up to heaven and saying in Aramaic the words, be open, Mark mentions the phrase. Did you see it in the text? When he looked up to heaven before he said, be open, the scripture says, with a deep sigh. Mark is saying that Jesus is having a strong emotional moment at this moment. As he considers all this man has lost in his life prior to Jesus' presence in his life, and I think in consideration of all human history, in all the world, in pain and sorrow that the world has experienced, he thinks of all of that and he sighs in emotion and in frustration. This was not how it was to be at the beginning. Now, Paul in Romans chapter 8 mentions three things about groaning. Number one, he says the creation groans. In other words, if creation, if trees and skies and flowers were people and had a voice, you would hear creation groaning. This is not for what I was made. Tornadoes and hurricanes and devastation. This was not why I was put here. But sin has slowly eroded the fabric of the environment to produce all of the things that we see in creation. And so as creation looks at what's happening inside of her, Paul says, she groans. Secondly, Paul says, Christians groan as they experience similar frustration and disappointment in life. But finally, Paul says, number three, the Holy Spirit groans out of frustration and with emotion, because what bothers us bothers God even more. I think we need to know that. I think we lose sight of that too quickly. Secondly, and finally, if we haven't been healed, it's not because God has stopped caring, but because God is up to something else that will prove to be very good in the long run. And this is where I've got to say it, and I don't like to say it, but I've got to say it. The statement, if you have your health, you have everything, is not true. Because there are plenty of people who have perfect health, and their soul is sick to the core. And they can't even appreciate the fact that they have their physical health. Physical health is not everything. Jesus is. Jesus is everything. That's why when Paul the apostle cried out to God for healing, God said, no, I'm not taking this away. My grace is sufficient for you. My power is going to be displayed to the world through your struggle and through your weakness. And that's why you haven't been healed. There's something more important in your life than being healed of this thorn. It's you and me spreading hope and good news to the world, and you're going to do that through your illness. I'm not saying that's the explanation for every reason why healing has not happened in our lives, but it is certainly a very strong one. And if we have our doubts about the efficacy and legitimacy of that, we only need to turn to Jesus, because Jesus, our suffering servant, incurred hell on earth as his body was ravaged and torn apart. But I'm telling you, it was good that he was not spared from that. This elderly lady was being visited by some young people at church, and she'd had a number of health problems, so they came to like encourage and kind of mention some of the things that she was going through. And she said something like, oh, those things, that's nothing the resurrection won't cure. So if our cure is not in the here and now, Jesus says, it will be in the forever to come. And so I close with these two challenges for the church. Number one, follow Jesus' example by serving and healing the sick. It was important to Jesus. It should be important to us. We have a church member that volunteers with the Cancer Society. She drives people to their chemotherapy and radiation treatments. She is participating in Jesus' healing ministry. We have another church member that advocates for the VA and for veterans to make sure that they get the services that are offered to them. He serves as the middleman for them. He is participating in the healing ministry of Jesus. When you visit someone in the hospital, when you make a family a casserole, or if you become a nurse or a doctor or a healthcare worker of any stripes, you need to understand, as a Christian, you are participating in the healing ministry of Jesus, just as Christians from the very beginning always have. Those pandemics in the Roman Empire, 165, took the life of the Emperor Marcus Aurelius. The other one in 251, pagans of means, when viruses broke out in cities, fled to the hills, abandoned their own sick in order to save their own hides. The writings of Homer, the commands of Zeus, offer no instruction in relationship to the idea or value of giving up and risking your own physical health in order to take care of the health of others. Even pagan authors about this time say, it was those Christians. When 5,000 people a day were dying in the city of Rome, those Christians who weren't just taking care of other Christians, they were taking care of us pagans. And a lot of them died because they took care of us. Why did they go down that path? Because they knew Jesus. He went down that very path of risking his own health in order to make other people healthy. The idea of the first hospital or hospice came from a Christian. seeing a group of lepers nobody wanted to take care of, raise money, built the structure. In the 1860s, a Christian was tired of hearing wounded soldiers on the battlefield crying out for relief. So he started, as a Christian, the Red Cross. We're going to risk our lives and we're going to go on those battlefields and we're going to bandage. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Red Cross has been around for so long, sometimes I don't even remember or recognize the name, that it's connected to Jesus, because it's just the Red Cross. But if you think about the names, Red Cross, the origin, connected to Jesus, all of these things happening in our world, all because of how amazing Jesus is. Have you heard about mercy ships? I can give you like hundreds and hundreds of things Christians are up to today. Mercy ships is one that caught my eye a few weeks ago. 5 billion people in our world lack access to safe surgery. Many die for very treatable causes, including 1 in 8 children before their 5th birthday. So this Christian, Don Stevens, had the idea, since like over 50% of the world's population lives near the coast, we'll get a big ship. And we'll get doctors and nurses to pay their own way and volunteer for a few weeks at a time. And we'll treat these very curable things that people have no care for. Take a look at this brief video clip to illustrate what Christians are up to.
Many of these patients have lived with this deformity for so long, years typically. The biggest part of plastics is to restore function.
Making an arm move that couldn't move before, or giving them back a function of a limb, or turning their neck, or standing up all the way straight, whatever it is.
That is what we do here, is to just get them back to a normal life.
You get to visibly see patients change and their lives be completely restored. It's a cool gift to be able to give someone for free.
It may happen in different ways, but what happened in Mark chapter 7, the healing of the deaf and mute man, still happening today through Jesus and Jesus' followers. Let's be a church that always extends care to people who are physically ill. And finally, number 2, let's follow Jesus' example by glorifying God when we're sick and not cured. We can either be bitter and angry and resentful when we're sick, or we can glorify God when we're sick. Let's follow Jesus' example and do that very thing. Because by doing that very thing, you know what happens? People see this amazing Jesus live and in person in your life. When everything's not perfect and not functioning, and yet you are being faithful to God like Jesus was. The old hymn says, "The great physician now is near, the sympathizing Jesus." We'll sing that song as we close this morning. we can pray or counsel with you or baptize you in the Christ to receive the health and forgiveness your soul desperately needs. Meet me down front and tell me how we can help as together we stand and sing.
Great position now.